Let's return to our story in the book of Judges, chapter number 18 is where we'll start today. This is an appendix or an additional story at the end of the book of Judges, which is telling about the falling apart of Israel's commitment to God during their early years in the Promised Land. When they weren't really looking at God as their unifying king. They had not stopped the Canaanites from coming back in to those areas that Joshua had cleared out in the first 6 years of his work. And the tribes were not occupying the allotments in full that had been given to them. They were even compromising with the Canaanites. One tribe in particular had difficulty, a lack of faith, and that was the tribe of Dan. They had land in the hills and land down by the Mediterranean coast, and they did not have the faith to take the land on the coast from the Canaanites, who had chariots. And it got to the point where the Canaanites were even coming back into the hill country and taking that property back as well. So Dan has at least some of their population that feel the need to look elsewhere for property. Judges chapter 18 begins with the theme phrase of the book. In those days, there was no king in Israel. The next part that we see elsewhere is, and everyone did as they saw fit in their own eyes. And that's never a good thing, by the way. In those days, the tribe of the people of Dan were seeking for themselves an inheritance to dwell in. For until then, no inheritance among the tribes of Israel had fallen to them. Now, do not misunderstand that. They had been given their tribal allotment by Joshua and the high priest Eleazar in the seventh year that Israel had been in the land. But in the few years since then, they hadn't bothered to take that property over. In fact, they were letting the Canaanites take it right back into their control. So they look for an easier place. Verse 2, so the people of Dan sent five able men from the whole number of the tribe, from Zorah and from Eshtaol, so that's apparently two cities that they actually do control, to spy out the land and to explore it. And they said to them, go and explore the land. And they came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and lodged there. So they head north, and they're looking as they go for an easy place to take over for themselves. And one of the places that they stop is in Ephraim at Micah's house. Verse 3, when they were by the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young Levite. This is why I told you yesterday that this young Levite must have stopped in the territory of Dan as he's wandering around looking for a place to serve as a pet priest of a private people. They know his voice. And so they turned aside. That's probably what brought them to the house of Micah. And they said to him, who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? What is your business here? And he said to them, well, this is how Micah dealt with me. He has hired me, and I have become his priest. So he's the pet priest of the family of Micah and the community that Micah is kind of in charge of. They said to him, "Oh, inquire of God, please, that we may know whether the journey on which we are setting out will succeed." So they want him to function as a priest. Now, really, the only one that you should be able to say, "Inquire of God for me, please," should be the high priest Eleazar at this time. Because he's the one that's got the Urim and the Thummim, and he is serving he who is at the tabernacle in Shiloh. But this young man, who is the grandson of Moses, is not playing by the rules of the covenant. And so he agrees that he will reach out to God in whatever way he was doing and see whether or not they would have a good trip. Verse 6, the priest said to them, "Go in peace. The journey on which you go is under the eye of he who is." Now, I don't believe he was tapped in to God. I believe he was spinning a tail. That's my opinion, and it's worth what you're paying it for. Verse 7. Then the five men departed, and they came to Laish. Now, Laish is now Dan. When I've made my two trips to Israel, Dan is one of the places that I find intriguing to go. It's got one of the sources of the upper Jordan River that gushes out of a area within the region right around the mound that is the ancient city of Dan. And there's also a lot of good archaeological things to see there, including the golden calf, the ruins of the golden calf temple and worship area that ended up being there. So if you're looking for Laish on a map, just look for Dan. It's up near Peneus or Caesarea Philippi if you're looking at a New Testament map of the Middle East. It's a day's journey or so north. That's walking, by the way. A day's journey north of the Sea of Galilee, about 30 miles, I think, something in that neighborhood. All right, so continuing. They came to Laish, and they saw the people who were there, how they lived in security after the manner of the Sidonians, quiet and unsuspecting, lacking nothing that is in the earth and possessing wealth, and how they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone. So there's some question, are these guys Canaanites? And I cannot answer that question. Because the Sidonians are off the list of those that the Israelis are supposed to attack and expel from the land. Canaanites are on the list of who they're supposed to expel or execute if they try to stay. So I can't tell you whether Laish should have been on the list of cities that should have been taken over by the Israelis. I don't have the full information to tell you that. The text here does say that they are somehow like the Sidonians, but they are not in constant contact and relationship with the actual Sidonians up by the city of Sidon. So they're kind of just hanging out there on their own. And nobody's going to come to their rescue. They don't have any alliances, evidently. And so that is what decides for these Danites that this is the perfect place for them to take over. Verse number 8. When they came back to their brothers at Zarah and Eshtaol, their brothers said to them, "What do you report?" They said, "Arise, let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it's very good." And it is. It's very lush. There's lots of water, as I said, because it's at the headwaters of the Jordan. Lots of flat land near the Tell, near the place where the city sits up high, so that it can have plenty of grain fields nearby. And there's hillsides to put in vineyards and olive trees and pomegranate trees, all of that stuff. It's a wonderful place if you are wanting to grow stuff. "Will you do nothing? Do not be slow to go, to enter and possess the land. And as soon as you go, you will come to an unsuspecting people. The land is spacious, for God has given it into your hands, a place where there is no lack of anything that is in the earth. So the five guys report back, we don't want to wait. We need to jump on this opportunity fast, because they're not expecting anyone to come in and take the land from them. Let's go do it and make this ours. So, 600 men of the tribe of Dan, armed with weapons of war, set out from Zorah and Eshtaol. So they are abandoning the territory of Dan. Now, this is not all the Danites. This is a select group of men and their families. So they went up and they encamped at Kiriath Yearim in Judah. So they went up the valley from their territory close to a place called Kiriath Yearim that's in Judah, less than a day's travel away. On this account, that place is called Mahane Dan to this day, because it is, behold, it's west of Kiriath Yearim. Mahane Dan just means the camp of Dan. And so the little camping site west of Kiriath Yearim gets this name, and it shows up in later stories. Verse 13, and they passed on from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. So they're retracing their steps, heading back to Laish, where they're going to take it over. 14. Then the five men who had gone to scout out the country of Laish said to their brothers, did you know that in these houses there are an ephod, household gods, a carved image, and a metal image? Now, therefore, consider what you will do. So they say, hey, you see this little community here? Inside there is everything needed to set up a little shrine building for ourselves once we get to our place. Think about that. Verse 15. They turned aside there and came to the house of the young Levite at the home of Micah and asked him about his welfare. Now the 600 men of the Danites, armed with their weapons of war, stood by the entrance of the gate. The five men who had gone to scout out the land went up and entered and took the carved image, the ephod, the household gods, and the metal image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war. And when these went into Micah's house and took the carved image, the ephod, the household gods, and the metal image, the priest said to them, what are you doing? So, why are you taking all this stuff out of the shrine building? I'm supposed to be functioning as the priest here. You're taking away my livelihood. They said to him, keep quiet. Put your hand on your mouth and then come with us and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest to the house of one man or to be the priest to a tribe and clan in Israel? So they basically say, look, guy, we're offering you an upgrade. We're offering you a raise and a promotion. Instead of being the pet priest of one guy and his little community here, we're giving you the chance to be the priest of a tribe. So the priest's heart was glad. And he took the ephod and the household gods and the carved image and went along with the people. So he's all on board with this now. So they turned and departed, putting the little ones and the livestock and the goods in front of them. So we've got several thousands of people that are in this move. When they had gone a distance from the home of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house were called and they overtook the people of Dan. So Micah, as I said, is the head of this community that is all around his house. And this community is kind of taking, they've become part of this little cult of the image that Micah has in his little shrine building. And so they're all upset, and so they get their little militia going, their little posse, to go and get their God back. Now remember, as insane as it seems to us as we go through this story, these guys think that that silver carved image represents He who is, Yahweh, even though it violates all of the principles that we talked about. They think they have to go and rescue Yahweh. They think that they have to go and rescue the God who brought them out of Egypt and through the wilderness and put them into the promised land. So they shouted to the people of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, "What is the matter with you that you've come with such a company?" And he said, "You take my gods that I made and the priest and you go away? What have I left? How then do you ask me what is the matter with you?" So he's like ticked and going, "Are you insane? What do you mean what's wrong with me? You're stealing my gods, my images. You're even stealing my priest." The people of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows fall upon you and you lose your life with the lives of your household." So they threaten him. They say, "You need to shut up, turn around, and go back and just be glad we're not killing you in the process of taking these things." Verse 26, "Then the people of Dan went their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his home." So he gives up. Verse 27, "But the people of Dan took what Micah had made, the priest who belonged to him, and they came to Laish, to a people quiet and unsuspecting, and they struck them with the edge of the sword and burned the city with fire." Now, if the city had been Canaanite, then what they did was in accordance with God's instructions. But they are not where they're supposed to be. The divine lot put them down to the south of Ephraim, to the west of Benjamin, and to the north of Judah. But they've abandoned that and have come up here because in their estimation, they could take this on their own. And so that's what they did. Verse 28, "There was no deliverer because it was far from Sidon. They had no dealings with anyone. It was in the valley that belongs to Beth Rehob," which is that valley that goes from, it's kind of a plain that's just to the north of the waters of Merom, the swampland of what's called Hula today. And it goes up to where the Jordan Valley, at least one of the branches of the Jordan, one of the mouths of the Jordan, not mouth, excuse me, one of the headwaters of Jordan, come out of the hill country to the north. And so all of that there is the valley that belongs to Beth Rehob. So they take the city over, verse 28, "Then they rebuilt the city and lived in it. And they named the city Dan, after the name of Dan, their ancestor, who was born to Israel. But the name of the city was Laish at the first." And so we have no problem finding exactly where this is. Been there, seen it myself. "The people of Dan set up the carved image for themselves, and Jonathan," that's the name of this guy, "the son of Gershom, son of Moses," and yes, that is the Moses who is the prophet of Israel, "and his sons after him were priests to the tribe of the Danites until the day of the captivity of the land." Now, this is shocking and sad, because it ties into a later story. They effectively set up a shrine building. It's up on the top of a hill, because I've been there. And this building is where they put their first idol. And I guess I should say idols, because they took the little teraphim, the clay or other shaped figures, out of the shrine building that Micah had made. They set it all up, and they build an altar, and they sacrifice to God up on this hill, and think that they're doing the right thing. Many centuries later, when the northern tribes and the city of Dan, which is also in the far north, break away from Judah, away from Solomon's son, Rehoboam, Jeroboam becomes the leader of the United Northern Tribes. And he is very concerned that he won't be able to maintain control if his people keep going to Jerusalem to worship. So he has two golden calves made and presents them as representations of Yahweh, of He who is, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, of the 12 tribes, of the temple in Jerusalem. And he sets these two golden calves up at convenient locations for his people in the northern tribes. One of them he sets up at Bethel, just north of the border that is now established between southern Judah and northern Israel. And that's to help the people in the southern part of his kingdom not to bother to cross the border anymore, because they can go to Bethel and worship God through the image of the calf there. The other calf is put here at Dan. And I believe it was set up at that exact same building where these images were put by the Danites, the original Danites. And this becomes the golden calf of Dan. And they continue worshiping. And it would appear as if Jeroboam lets this family, these descendants of Jonathan, the grandson of Moses, keep functioning as the priests of the golden calf at Dan. And it keeps on happening right up until 723 BC, when the northern kingdom collapses under the judgment of God, under the invasion of the Assyrians. So this particular verse in the book of Judges must have been written and put into the text by a prophet from the time after the Assyrian captivity. Verse 31. So they set up Micah's carved images that he made as long as the house of God was at Shiloh. So the whole time that the people of Israel were supposed to be going to the tabernacle at Shiloh, these guys in the northern city of Dan weren't bothering to go there anymore, because they had their own little worship site up on a hill with this silver image and the little pet priest that's the grandson of Moses servicing this site. So very, very sad situation, and it matches exactly what the book of Judges says. There was no king in Israel in those days. Every man did as he saw fit in his own eyes. And then my commentary on that, and that was not a good thing. Well, let's set some stuff up for tomorrow by going to the book of Joshua now. And we're going to go to Joshua chapter 23, which is going to report the death of Joshua. And it says there, a long time afterward. And the tradition amongst the Jewish people is that Joshua died 25 years after the death of Moses. So 25 years into Israel's time in the Promised Land. And that matches pretty well our understanding of his age, because he dies, I think it's at 110, and we know he must have been in his 80s whenever they came into the Promised Land. Now, what's happening during this time? the stuff we've been talking about. After that first seven-year period, the Israelis started letting the Canaanites come back in and occupy stuff. They were making compromises with them. We've got idol worship that's starting to come back amongst the Israelis that should have been annihilated. It is a mess. And so Joshua sees that that's what's happening. He is not able, because of perhaps his age, to really affect any type of change forcibly upon these people, because they're all making it up as they go along. So he decides, as he comes close to his death, he needs to set down a challenge for the Israelis to do the right thing. So verse number 2 says, Joshua summoned all Israel, its elders and heads, its judges and officers, and he said to them, I am now old and well advanced in years, and you have seen all that he who is your God has done to all these nations for your sake, for it is he who is your God who has fought for you. So you guys, the oldest among you, you know what's happened. You know how God gave us this land and how I was there at the forefront, breaking the power of the fortified cities. Verse 4, behold, I've allotted to you as an inheritance for your tribes those nations that remain, along with all the nations that I already cut off from the Jordan to the Great Sea in the west. So he tells them, I've already told you which properties belong to which tribes, at God's command, at God's divine lot. I've showed you that information. And then, when we come back tomorrow, he's going to tell them, you have got to get out there and do what God told you to. You've got to occupy the land, and you need to do it now. See you tomorrow for more of this story.